and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Representative Zhang, would you care to approve the minutes from the March 10th? Oh, no, today is March 10th. Sorry about that, March 3rd meeting.
Over the chair.
Representative Zhang moves the minutes from March 3rd. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. First up is a presentation from the Commemorative Air Force Minnesota Wing. We've got Mr. Bredesen, Mr. Loria, Ms. Loria, and Mr. McNeil. Please identify yourselves for the record and proceed.
Well, thank you all for having us. I'm Amy Loria.
Jim Loria.
Andy Bredesen.
Jason McNeil.
And we're with the Commemorative Air Force Minnesota Wing Museum. We're a nonprofit museum located in South St. Paul that primarily focuses on the preservation of World War II aircraft, Korea, and Vietnam specifically. So, my slide's out of order, I think. What's up on the screen? let me go to the next slide. So as I mentioned, we are a World War II aircraft museum located in South St. Paul. Some of you may have been there. Even our home is historic. We are located at Fleming Field, which was a World War II training facility during, World War II. Do you want to talk more about it at all?
It was one of the places that George Bush Sr. trained. He trained in Stearman's for his primary flight training. They went through a number of different names. It was Base B for a while, NAS Minneapolis Base B. But it became Fleming Field after a Navy veteran who sacrificed his life and won the Congressional Medal of Honor.
What's really neat about our hangar is that we could be in a, you know, a normal hangar that was built 10 years ago, but since it was built in 1938, it really adds to the historical value and kind of feel of the museum when patrons come to visit. So we were actually established in 1971 as a maintenance facility for the national organization, which was based down in Texas, Harlingen initially. Now they're in Dallas. And our unit was actually started by Minnesota Air Guard members originally.
I was back in the old days when they had C-46s. C-96s. They went down and visited Harlingen, Texas, on a mission, enjoyed the air show down at Harlingen, and got to know the guys down there, and started our unit as the first unit. Now there are over 80 units within the CAF.
And what's really neat is next year, 2021, we're actually celebrating our 50th anniversary. So we're prepping now for that to have some pretty big events next year at Fleming Field, and it should be pretty exciting.
And we're going to be doing that also in conjunction with the centennial of the 133rd Airlift Wing, which two of us are still members of.
Let's see. So in addition to a museum, we also have four vintage vehicles that are on display. Patrons can come down and actually take rides in our vehicles. We participate in parades, different functions like the state fair, back to the 50s, all kinds of different local events as well, so people can actually get up close and personal with our vehicles. We have seven aircraft now, eight.
Seven.
Okay. We've got some in restoration, so it's hard to tell.
Pieces of aircraft in some cases.
We've got a North American SNJ Texan, a Vultee BT-13 Valiant, a PT-22. Which is an open cockpit and really fun to fly in. And then a Stinson L5. We've got an L17, which is in restoration, and we're hoping to complete it for next year as well. Is that still on target?
Yep, that's on target.
And then some of you may be familiar with our B-25 Miss Mitchell. She's a medium-range bomber that was donated to us in 1980. It was a 12-year restoration process on Miss Mitchell. It's actually still ongoing. We're continuously updating Miss Mitchell to be as historically accurate as possible. But the really, really neat thing is her first flight was April 18th, 1992, which was 50 years to the day of the Doolittle Raid. So it's kind of a big honor for us to share that date. You guys want to say anything else about Ms. Mitchell?
Her crew chief was a Minnesota resident during World War II, and he had her painted up as Ms. Mitchell. The original aircraft was actually brought home after the war. There were no casualties on her, and it was used for target practice at one of the proving grounds, the Aberdeen Proving Ground. So we took this airplane and painted it up the same way in his honor, used the same artist who painted the original Miss Mitchell, and Ray was a crew chief who taught a number of us how to maintain the aircraft up until he passed away in 2012, I believe it was.
We're very honored to carry on the legacy of the World War II veterans. So 2020 is a very exciting year for us. We just announced that we are participating in the Dick Cole, the Lieutenant Colonel Richard Cole's memorial flyover. He was Jimmy Doolittle's co-pilot during the Doolittle Raid. He passed away last year at 103. He was a honorary member of the wing and also a close personal friend of all of ours, and so we're very honored that we get to be a part of that flyover.
Yeah, in fact, the last B-25 he ever flew was our B-25. He flew it from Madison to Oshkosh, Wisconsin for the Oshkosh Air Show. And at this point, we're going to be one of four B-25s that will do a missing man flyover over Arlington on the 16th of April.
And then after that, we're going to be participating in the Arsenal Democracy, which is honoring and celebrating the 75th anniversary of VE Day. And Andy is actually going to be our co-pilot on Miss Mitchell. So I don't know if you want to talk about AOD.
It's actually going to be really cool. We've got 107 airplanes right now. With the CAF, we've got a quarter of those, about 27 airplanes. We're going to be probably about number 7 or 8 with 8 B-25s flying over to commemorate the Doolittle Raid. And then we're going to continue on the 8th to Udvar Hazy, and we're going to sit and display at the Smithsonian during that. So it's going to be a huge undertaking. There's actually a public law that was passed to actually make this happen because we're flying in airspace that is verboten for most people. We're going to actually be flying over the south part of the mall, the Capitol Mall, right over the Air and Space Museum. So it's going to be, a huge event and a lot of press coverage and kind of cool.
Yeah, it's going to be really exciting. I don't think there'll be any photos of that, though, so don't ask. So we need help getting the word out. As a 501c3, the airplanes are very costly to us. We want to see them fly. We want to see them be experienced by as many people as possible. And what's different about us from a normal museum is people can actually get up close and personal and touch the airplanes and get inside and even take flights. So we need help getting the word out. Absolutely.
Just on the B-25, everyday upkeep on the plane in a year, nuts, bolts, screws, is anywhere between $13,000 to $15,000 a year, and that's if we have a good year. So funding is very critical to keep these things in mind.
And that's just on the maintenance side. Once you get into operation, it burns 150 gallons of fuel an hour, 100 low lead, which is about $5 a gallon. And burns about a gallon and a half of oil per hour. Holds 37.5 gallons per engine. So Miss Mitchell alone is a huge cost undertake. And we love doing it, and we love getting out there and flying. And we make our money from donations and air shows and history flights, which are which is the RIDES program. We try to do everything in the safest way possible, but allow people to experience something that they normally wouldn't be able to.
Mm-hmm. I put together the last slide, or the second to last slide. Apparently we're South St. Paul's best kept secret. We've been there for 50 years and nobody knows we exist, or very few people do. We're open Wednesdays and Saturdays, and we just ask for a donation if you can, but if you can't, we want everybody to enjoy the museum. We attend, or we host two World War II swing dances every year. You can donate or partner with us. You can buy a ride. You can volunteer. We're all volunteers. We've got about 190, I think, volunteers now all over the country. And you don't have to be a pilot or a mechanic. You can do paperwork, or you can do finance. You can work in our gift shop. You can give tours. We have lots of different jobs. Anything else about Lindsay?
That's why.
Okay. Questions? Comments?
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And have you come across Jerry Kaiser?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
He's a member.
Okay. I always have to ask that when we're dealing with aircraft and so forth. He's a real winner when it comes to our World War II veterans and our Korean War veterans and taking those honor flights. So,
absolutely.
Next, one of our pilots as well.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you for the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Heinrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering, on the picture of the B-25, Miss Mitchell, is there any significance operationally to the interior of the engines being painted to darker color, or is that simply just an artistic eye of the beholder thing?
I'll have to go back to it. I apologize.
The inside.
Oh, that is a glare shield, so it prevents sunlight from shining into the pilot's eyes. So they've also got it in front of the windshield there, too.
That's what I was wondering. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Well, I want to – I'll go first. This this L-17 Navion, I think that may be the reason that you guys are here today.
Oh.
Representative Hansen. So somebody does know about you. Okay. Representative Hansen forwarded me some restoration pictures of what you guys are doing.
Wonderful.
And we thought it'd be an interesting thing to have you come in committee and talk about it. So thank you for doing that. Thank you for preserving our aviation history, because I think it's very important. And hopefully for you guys coming to this committee hearing, you'll get a little bit more word out. But like I said, Representative Hansen forwarded this to me, so there are some people that are paying attention to what you guys are doing in anyway. So
very good.
Cool. Well, thank you so much.
And we appreciate your time. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
All right. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Next up, House File 4244, Representative Christensen. Oh, a little dyslexic today. 4224. Chair moves that House File 4224 be referred to Judiciary and Finance and Civil Law Division. Representative Christensen, tell us all about your bill.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. And thank you for giving me the privilege of presenting the bill for the veterans in terms of housing. State agencies, councils, and groups across Minnesota work to identify and provide services for individuals and families experiencing homelessness. In partnership with the Minnesota Interagency Council on Homelessness, and in accordance with Heading Home, Minnesota's plan to prevent and end homelessness, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs has developed the Homeless Veterans Registry. The registry assembles a team of housing and service professionals who work together to help veterans on a case-by-case basis to access housing and services that meet their needs. Data for individuals experiencing homelessness is classified as private data under Minnesota Statutes 13.587. The result is a limitation which has led to a fragmented and inefficient response to time-sensitive crisis situations for individuals and families experiencing homelessness. This proposal classifies data on individuals on the Homeless Veterans Registry as private and authorizes the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs to share or disclose an individual's data to coordinate homelessness prevention efforts with MICH members, Homeless Veterans Registry partners to respond quickly to an individual experiencing homeless or at risk of homelessness. The intent of the bill is to drastically increase the timeliness and efficiency of addressing the needs of individual veterans experiencing homelessness in Minnesota, streamlining processes and procedures, allowing for quicker response times to veterans in crisis. And with that, I have some testifiers.
Thank you, Representative. Chair Eklund, members of the committee, my name is Ben Johnson. I'm the legislative director for the State Department of Veterans Affairs, and I also brought the director for our SSAP and programs team, Andrew Jarvis.
Good morning, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Andy Jarvis. I'm the director of Veterans Programs and Memorial Affairs. And today I just wanted to orient you to where we're at in the state of Minnesota, first with our mission of ending veteran homelessness, and then talk a little bit of two things that this bill would do. So as of today, about an hour ago, we have 256 homeless veterans in the state of Minnesota. And what this bill does is allows us to share data more rapidly so that we can develop housing solutions for those individuals quicker. To put that into perspective, as of today, on average in Hennepin County, it takes us 218 days to house an individual, and in Ramsey County, 141 days. And to meet the criteria of the U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness, a community must rapidly house someone within 90 days. So although over the years we've been really successful in breaking down barriers and overcoming obstacles that lead us to house individuals, a common theme that we always have been trying to tackle is the ability to share data with our most important partners, who are often the ones that are charged with case counseling and managing these veterans and finding the housing plans for them. So this Veteran Stable Housing Initiative really does two things. One, it reaffirms our responsibility to end veteran homelessness and codifies our responsibility to support the Minnesota Interagency Council on Homelessness per Minnesota Statute 462.29, and gives us clear authority to self-fund what we've already been funding in an effort to become the fourth state to end veteran homelessness. The second thing, it allows us to share data on homeless veterans with our partners, which is a critical component to housing the remaining veterans that have the highest barriers and require more comprehensive case conferencing to develop their housing plan that will reduce the chances of recidivism. So with that, I will open up to any questions that the committee and chair may have.
First off, we'll see if there's anybody in the audience that wants to testify for or against this bill. Going up, Tommy. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Tommy Johnson. I'm the legislative officer for the Veterans of Foreign Wars. And as many of you know, we have been tracking the homeless problem in Minneapolis or in Minnesota for many years. One of the problems is timeliness of sharing information. Little background, there are now 78 communities in over 30 states, from Las Vegas to New Orleans to Des Moines to Philadelphia to the entire state of Virginia, that have ended veteran homelessness. This step is a right direction. We'll see if it helps speed the process up. If it doesn't, we will probably be asking next season for even more action. There are so many places that have ended veteran homelessness, we need to do that here too. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. So questions from the committee. Representative Heinrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for being here, Mr. Johnson. What if you could point out maybe one or two key things that we don't do that some of these other cities have done to end veteran homelessness?
A veteran preference on all state-funded homeless programs. This legislature allocates millions annual, every biannual, to Hennepin County and Ramsey County for homeless programs, and it is not targeted to eliminate veteran homelessness. There was something that we saw, a quick thing that happened in Minneapolis just the other day. The Minneapolis committee, a committee of Minneapolis government, voted to send to the full council the ability of the Minneapolis Public Housing Authority to pay 100% of undocumented families' rent. In last December, some of you may have read this story in the Star Tribune. Minneapolis Public Housing caused the fiance of a two-tour Iraq veteran and their two-year-old child to become homeless. This says a lot about the city of Minneapolis when they would cause a two-year-old child of a combat veteran to become homeless, yet consider a proposal to pay 100% of the rent for undocumented families.
Mr. Johnson, we don't take care of Minneapolis issues here. I understand your frustration with that, but that's not something dealt with in this committee. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one question on this data sharing. Do the veterans have, are they aware that their information is being shared, or do they have to sign off on it, or because it says that it's going to be shared with these different agencies? How's that data handled? Who gets to say when that data gets shared?
Mr. Jarvis?
Mr. Chair, Representative Miller, they are aware. Right now we have a fairly robust Tennyson warning process. So veterans on the Homeless Veteran Registry sign a Tennyson, and on there it discusses what we're going to do with their data and how it will be used to develop housing plans for them. And so that's how we've been sharing data currently. There's issues with that, though. For example, when we have a new nonprofit or organization that enters the homeless response system, that weren't originally on the Tennyson warning, we then have to undergo an entirely new version of a Tennyson. We have to retool our Homeless Veteran Registry, which is a software system, to be able to identify which veterans on the registry have signed, you know, Tennyson version 2.0 versus Tennyson version 3.0, and then we have to go out and find every single veteran to sign the new Tennyson in order to share the data. And then it has the ripple effect of then having to have separate meetings where, say, in Hennepin County, we're going to have the Hennepin County registry meeting with Tennyson 2.0, and any of the new organizations that we're partnering with can't be part of that meeting, but that they can come in to the second part of the meeting where we'll discuss the version 3.0 Tennyson clients.
Okay. One more follow-up question, Mr. Chair.
Jim Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you could then explain, when someone basically has housing, stable housing, and they're off of, they're no longer a homeless veteran, is there a process by which they're removed from that registry?
Mr. Jarvis.
Mr. Chair, Representative Miller, correct. So when a veteran is housed, they're in the registry, we label them as housed, and they no longer appear at our weekly Homeless Veteran Registry meetings. And in this language, we only allocate for the small number of clients that maybe are receiving MDVA funds to maintain their housing, in which case we can share data on those individuals to the nonprofits who are working with that veteran to maintain their housing. But if the veteran is not receiving any MDVA funds, then we wouldn't be sharing data with those partners.
Thank you. Representative Brand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to make a quick statement about where I represent. I represent in southern Minnesota, and especially Mankato. I was really proud of the fact that Governor Walz came down to Mankato, and all of the partners that we have in our area came together in the same area as the Minnesota Valley Action Council in Mankato, and we came together that morning for the governor to proclaim an end to veteran homelessness in southern Minnesota. That said, I wish that was it, but it's not. We're no longer looking for homeless veterans, and now we can triage those veterans as they come to us asking for help, and we can provide them with resources. And so I'm really glad to see that we have a very good partnership in southern Minnesota where we can say we do have that quest to end veteran homelessness. But just the same, we know people move around, and we know that people fall on hard times, whether it be medical related or loss of employment or whatever it be. And it's really glad to know that we've got that support to take care of them and to help them find housing right away instead of trying to find the folks that are already homeless. And so I'm hopeful that we can do that for the rest of Minnesota. And so I'm happy to do that with you guys. Thank you. And then for the author, I just wanted to say I signed on to your bill because it's a good bill. So thanks a lot.
Representative Grossel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and for the author. I guess I heard something about veterans' preference on. Is that on this legislation or no?
No, it's not.
Is that something that you would consider, Representative, for the author?
Mr. Jarvis.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Grossel, the way that this statute is written and where it falls within MDVA statutes on data on veterans, I don't believe it would be appropriate to attach a veteran's preference there, but I think that we're in full support and discussing with the legislature on any member that would be willing to look at a veteran's preference on housing subsidies that are funded by the state of Minnesota. I know it's something that we believe is needed, and our team has actively been engaged with Hennepin and Ramsey County and other COCs where we have been successful in getting a veteran's preference on their COCs, so any county funded subsidies and some state funded subsidies that pass through that COC for approval, we do have a veteran's preference on, but widely as an entire state, we don't currently have a veteran's preference on housing subsidies. I hope that answers your question.
Chair Eklund, Representative, one of the reasons why the VFW is supportive of this bill is the current Tennyson restrictions allow or restrict the ability of MDVA and its partner agencies to contact a local post for help. And we're hoping that this bill will speed that up because there are times that a local post can do something, but they don't have the authority through a release of information to allow that to happen.
Any other questions? Mr. Jarvis, I missed the number. Did you say it was 264?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, 256. And to make it known, we recently launched a public-facing dashboard. So if you go to mn.gov/MDVA and you navigate through our benefits page and into the homeless veterans page, you'll see a live dashboard that has a whole bunch of data and demographics on our homeless veterans by COC. So you can look at your areas and see how many are homeless and some of the demographic data. But and it's updated every hour. And yes, as of an hour ago, that number was 256, Chair Eklund.
Thank you. Can you tell me approximately what the number was a year ago?
I don't have that number off the top of my head. I know it was just north of 300, so it was right around that 305, 310 number, Chair Eklund, but we can get that specific number for you.
I don't need the specific number. I'm making the point that we are making progress, and I compliment the bill author for bringing this forward and the agency for working on it because we are making progress, and we need the number to be zero sooner rather than later. That's the goal of this whole operation. So thank you. Any other questions? No, I'm sorry, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know this is a priority for the last commissioner and the current commissioner and our current governor is to eliminate the homelessness. And do you have any idea how many counties out of the 87 counties have we eliminated homelessness?
Mr. Jarvis.
Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, I don't have that number offhand. I know that we have five COCs that have declared an end to veteran homelessness, and there's 10 COCs in the state of Minnesota.
Thank you. Thank you.
To that point, Mr. Jarvis, I know when I did a briefing with my County Veteran Services Officer about what my goals were when we took over chairing this committee, and she said, well, we don't have to worry about in Coochin County. I said, but I don't have to just worry about Coochin County anymore. I got to worry about the whole state. So, but thank you. To the bill author, any final words?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, for listening. This is a good bill, and I'm proud to carry it. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Representative Christensen. The chair renews his motion that House File 4224 be referred to Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Division. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. Motion carries. We're off to... You're off to Judiciary, Representative Christensen. So, House File 135, Representative Daniels.
That looks nice.
Thank you.
from the committee, Representative Daniels. The chair moves House File 135 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means, and there is an author's amendment. You ready for that amendment, Representative Daniels?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
The chair moves the A3 amendment to the amendment, Representative Daniels.
Amendment is basically changing the name, I believe, on the plates, and that's kind of still in progress, trying to come up with a name that kind of fits the criteria of everybody that wants to be a part of this. So that's just my motion, my amendment to change the name on the plates.
Any discussion to the amendment? All in favor of the A3 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. Motion carries. The bill itself as amended. Representative Daniels.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee, for allowing us to present the bill. We've been working on this bill for, I think, about 2 years, a little over 2 years. And so I don't screw it up, I'm actually going to read from the script that I have so I don't mess up anything. Well, thank you again for hearing us. This bill would create a new license plate for the active members and retirees of the Air Ready Reserve for the 934th Airlift Wing of the Air Force Ready Reserve and the 133rd Airlift Wing of Minnesota National Guard. The Air Force Ready Reserve is a component of the United States Air Force, and approximately 69,000 members of the Air Reserve are around the United States. The Air Reserve has 9 bases, 54 active duty joint bases with the National Guard, including the 934th Airlift Wing, known as the Flying Vikings or Global Vikings, at St. Paul International Airport. They fly the C-130H cargo aircraft. The 133rd Airlift Wing of Minnesota National Guard is one of 2 air wings in the National Guard. The 148th is based out of Duluth, and the other air wing is, and what they fly in that group is the F-16s. There's a total approximately about 2,300 members of the Air Guard. 133rd is based in Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport. And again, they use the C-130H for transporting people, equipment, supplies. To qualify for the license plate, there would be an additional $10 fee. And then also, if you want to transfer the plates to another vehicle, there would be an optional or a $5 transfer fee. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Lieutenant Pershing. He was nice enough to come down. He's been busy flying around the world, and we got a chance to get him in between flights. Before they do it, I just have to put the two and two together. Representative Detmer, this young man is from Forest Lake. So,
let's pass the bill right now.
Welcome to the committee.
He's Air Force.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Pershing. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, members. My name is Lieutenant Pershing. I am a pilot with the 934th. Basically, my history is I've been in the Air Force for 14 years now. Was a radio operator on AWACS active duty for 4 years and then joined the 934th as a loadmaster and then moved up into the front seat and actually started flying the plane. As Representative Daniels mentioned, there are 2 air wings in the state of Minnesota that operate. We each operate 8 C-130s and performing missions like airlift, airdrop, and air evac of patients. And all of these members are citizen airmen. So when they are out and about, not only amongst town, but also at their normal everyday full-time jobs, they look just like you or me, dressed in civilian clothes, and people would never know that they actually do what they do. These license plates would allow them to go ahead and show their pride in their job and basically their part-time job that takes up a lot more than just part-time. Some keynotes, and I'll speak to the 934th since I know them better than the 133rd or the 148th. Basically, recently we celebrated our 75th anniversary and participated in exercises and current operations all the way from Normandy to we just returned from 1 tour in the Middle East right now doing airdrops over Syria, airlift out of Afghanistan and Iraq, and the 133rd I believe just returned this month from their tour overseas. Currently, we participate in exercises all around the world to include Poland, Germany. We're getting ready to go to the Philippines, Norway, and Normandy recreations due to our squadron actually being one of the original squadrons to perform the airdrops in Normandy. These deployed airmen have made history, not only with the major ones, but also we were the first group to go ahead and do airdrops in Syria in 2014, and we continue to provide that support these days. So basically, this bill would allow us to show our pride when we are out and about amongst town and maybe even open up dialogue with other people and be able to share our stories. I'm open for any questions if the committee has any.
Thank you, Lieutenant. We appreciate it. Is there anybody from the audience who wish to testify for or against this bill? Open up to committee questions. Representative Detmer.
Mr. Chair, and testifier, you said you're a loadmaster. You might want to explain to the committee exactly what a loadmaster does, because when my unit was deployed, we were loading everything on a C-5, and I was pretty impressed by what the loadmaster was doing. I'm sure the pilots are pretty encouraged when the loadmaster knows what he's doing. So,
Lieutenant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. Basically, a loadmaster, they are an enlisted position, and they are the system expert in the back of any cargo aircraft. So they actually manage the safe loading and unloading of all of the cargo, along with rigging and performing the airdrop mission. So if they are not experts in what they do, there's a potential for everything to go very wrong when we do airdrops. And then also, if something does go wrong, they know exactly how to handle it. And there are definitely some situations where their expertise can either save or hurt an aircraft. And they are probably one of our most underrated positions on the aircraft.
Thank you. Thank you.
Any other questions from the committee? Lieutenant, just curious, what are you doing your day job?
Thank you, Chairman. On my day job, I used to be a software engineer. I just got back from pilot training a couple of years ago, so currently they still have me on full-time orders and working full-time at the base in order to become more proficient in being a pilot. But in my day job, I used to be a software engineer for a data recovery company.
I was just curious, Lieutenant, because my son's a pilot for one of the airlines. I thought maybe if you did that, you might run into him once in a while. So that's all. The only reason I asked. Any other questions? Chair renews his motion that House File 135, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Motion carries. You're on your way, Representative Daniels.
Thank you very much. It's been an honor to work with these gentlemen, and just thank you for your time.
House File 3266. Representative Detmer, care to move your bill?
I move my bill, and Mr. Chair, where is it going at from here?
Being referred to State Government Finance.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yep. And members, House File 3266. I've been to this committee before regarding the Disabled Vets Camp on Big Marine Lake. It's part of my district, and over the years we've seen some incredible changes going on with this camp, how it serves our veterans and their families. House File 3266 appropriates $128,000 legacy funds for the Disabled Vets Camp and located on Big Marine Lake. And the big purpose of these funds is to keep going with what we're doing on the camp and expanding the camp. And now we're looking at some real security and safety things that we need to do with the camp. The camp is located, in Washington County, and there's a Washington County Park right next to the camp. And a lot of people are trying to come over to the camp, and we need some security issues with the camp. So these funds will be used for making improvements in the camp and security issues. I'm going to turn it over to a couple of people from the camp here. We have our president of the board of directors. We got Sheldon Sandman, and also our camp manager, Ken Larson. So, and you should have a handout. And I was pretty impressed when they came with this handout because it goes through the facilities of the camp. In order to use the camp, you have to be a veteran or a guest of a veteran. And I also have some statistics about the camp, too, that I might share later.
Please welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Representatives, my name is Sheldon Sandman. I'm president of the board of directors. I believe you all have a handout, and I apologize, but I need to make sure that everyone is aware that there's a mistake in the phone number. Would you please correct the phone number by using 651-433-2699. That will get you directly to the camp and the camp manager. So I've been on the board for over 10 years, and we had a couple of members that decided after we received autonomy to recognize the changes that could be made at the camp to better serve the veterans and their families. As Representative Detmer said, we're just over by Stillwater on Big Marine Lake. We have 69 acres that are pretty well finished off, except for a corner that we would still be looking at doing something with. But right now, we would like to focus on just making the changes necessary to give us completion to a number of projects. They're relatively small in nature. By completing a little bit of the way the ground lays, we've made some changes, and so we have to watch how our water flows. We do not want to have that going into the lake. So there'll be some landscape changes, but primarily what we're looking at doing, we have one security wall already established as you come in the camp. It's on the right-hand side. We want to complete the left-hand side and install gates that would allow us to control the comings and goings of people. We, on occasion, will have an issue with someone getting a little bit of misdirection, perhaps. I don't know, but they'll drive up our driveway, which is relatively close to the Washington County Park, and not being aware or understanding the protocol, will drive right through. And last year we had an issue where it could have been life-threatening for some of the children. We only allow a 5-mile-an-hour speed on the campground proper, only because the campers are located relatively close to all of the roads in the camp. We have been out there since 1926. Initially, we were allowed to partner with the Veterans Administration. The facilities were used for then the shell shock veterans. We had doctors and nurses in place, and we had a cook or two who helped maintain the renewal for that veteran to address not only their personal issues, but the families. The families were allowed to come out and visit their loved ones whenever they so desired. Over the years, that initial structure fell into disrepair and needed to be removed. And since then, and since we have autonomy, we have proceeded with gaining favor with Washington County by starting our construction on a pavilion that is absolutely beautiful. And from there, over the next 10 years, we just a couple of years ago completed the old cabins, some of them dating back to 1933 when they were initially built for the people who were working at the camp. I just want to give a couple of minutes to our camp manager who can cover some of the more recent additions to what we have done. We have this minor project, and then in the next couple of years, we're going to see if we can't finish by giving the camp manager a new home or a refurbished home and a community center. Both of these are high-dollar items, but we want to finish up these other projects first before we start to do our fundraising and so on. So with that, I'd like to introduce our camp manager, if he's ready. Yeah. All right.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Hi, my name is Ken Larson, and I am the day-to-day operations camp manager at the Veterans Campground. Give you a little background on myself. I've been going up to this resort up here since 1978 when I first went into boot camp. Served down in Holman Field for about 20 or 15 years down there until my kids got all grown up. But I've been around this campground since 78. And I tell you, with the amount of work that we have done up here in the last 10, 12 years now, it's been outstanding. We went from, say, like 3,000 visitors to just last year, I think we hit 32,438 that came to the camp. And with that said, like Sheldon says, priority, the main concern is the security up there at the front gate now. One example, I had a car come off 180th, come flying right through the office. Just kept on going, 40 miles an hour. Luckily, it was 7:30 in the morning. The guy pulled over and just sat right there in his car, and he says, can I help you with something? Well, 40 miles an hour is not allowed in this campground. He goes, where am I? I said, well, now I need your keys. So the deputies were in no time, and there's some drug activity up in that area. I ain't gonna lie, but, you know, I keep myself attained. The house is located right up in the main entrance of the camp right there, so I'm always constantly watching everything. My office guy, Bill, we're about the only ones that really run around at night and make sure everything is safe around the campground there, because 69 acres. And be on any given day, we got, you know, 4th of July, we would have probably about 2,000 to 3,000 people in this campground during that week, because that's the biggest vacation time. So it's time to come to a conclusion now that since we moved the office forward and on to the road right there, now we have a little bit of control, but it's still going to need more. And so I'm thinking just the fence around it and the gates right there. And then the people that are registered with us, they got a code. They'll come in and punch in the code, and then they're able to come in. So we just got to slow down up there. But with all the improvements here that we've done, and we're with the Lake Association up there and everything, we're getting along with them just fine. A lot of good fishing up in that area. Like Sheldon said, all of our older cabins that were done, Over a 12-year period, they were all back in 1930s built, and our little cantina has been going up through some cantina updates itself. And it's the only place in Minnesota you can smoke in, too, so a lot of old veterans enjoy that one for whatever reason, but they do. We've seen an increase in children coming up in there by far. It used to be but I had my three kids up there. There's maybe about a dozen of them. These days, I could have 600-700 kids up there. So we're getting the word out with all of our younger veterans. Even our younger veterans, I would say I probably got maybe a couple dozen young ones coming back from Iraq, Afghanistan, Persian Gulf War, and all that. They're starting to come out now and start enjoying camping life, too. Before it was, right now, about, if I had to say, I probably got about 85% of my camp would be Vietnam veterans, and probably about 12 would be all my younger generations, and the other ones would just be other, where they were all peacetime and everything like that. But there's still veterans there. And then with the walking trails and everything that we got going on in there, that's been being used up really good. All the volunteers that have helped us over the years, including the IEBWs, Local 110 here in St. Paul. Our Iron Workers Union came up and stepped up to the plate and built us two bridges over our swampland to continue on with the trail. And we got a bunch of Vietnam veterans that are trying to get together and trying to utilize that area and island up there where the bridges are. I want to call it my Vietnam Trail, Memorial Trail. And so they're trying to come up with plans to see what they can do to put them in there. I'm thinking like a Huey 58 hanging up on a stand or something up in that area. But they're working on all the aspects of what they would like to have, because we do have a Korean Memorial Garden up there. So I'd like to see every generation of the past going forward. I know we do have a Gulf War Memorial up there by our pavilion right now, and them soldiers are taking care of their own little private little garden right there. So as we keep on moving forward, we're just going to get busier and busier. There's no doubt about it. You know, we help the VA Minneapolis home, the Hastings home down there. They come up and do their ice fishing excursions. But they come up in September, and we take them out on their big pontoon, had them for a couple hours of fishing. So we do a lot of stuff. We just got a grant from the Department of Veteran Affairs for $34,000. So we got a 4, 6, and 8 passenger shuttle golf cart. So when these homes do come up, they're able to utilize the golf carts, the shuttles, versus the buses driving around, which they don't get to see very much at the camp. So, and they've already utilized them since last October now, since we got them. They're very happy with that. So, like I said, all of our volunteers helping us out up there. That's all I got there, Sheldon.
Well, I just wanted to finish by letting everyone know that we either sponsor or co-sponsor approximately 30 events up there. Our big first one of the year is always our flag retirement ceremony. And we have a very good attendance and a ceremony for the veterans in that regard. The American Legion, Veterans of Foreign Wars, Washington County, we are a Yellow Ribbon camp. We have Camp Gratitude coming up. But most of this stuff is annotated in your handout. If you wouldn't mind just reviewing that at your leisure. Well, I know you don't have much leisure time. You guys are pretty busy. But nonetheless, if you have any questions, please call us, and I'd entertain taking any questions at this time if there are any.
Thank you, Mr. Sandman. Mr. Larson, any question? Anybody for or against the bill in the audience? Thank you, Representative Grossel.
I guess if you made that statement of us not having any leisure time, what's Bob been telling you?
Mr. Chair, I think if you ever get it, maybe someday we could take a tour of the camp, because over the my tenure here in the legislature, I've been able to get some funding for them to make the improvements. And I know we had the Marine Corps. The Marine Corps came in and put in the waterfront for us on Big Marine Lake, a swimming area for the kids. The iron workers came in and put the bridges in for us. I just think that it's many new young families are coming in with their kids. We've gotten new playground equipment for them. And many more campsites are set up now for RVs and travel trailers. So it's just a great place to spend some of your summer time. And, you know, just last year, some new campers that came in, six Korean War veterans, 97 Vietnam War veterans, 53 Gulf War veterans, 72 Iraqi Afghanistan veterans. These are new veterans coming into the camp. That was 277 new veterans that are using the camp now. And as Mr. Larson said, last year we had over 32,000 visitors that came into the camp. That equals about 175 a day. And you can go online, reserve a cabin. I know some of the new cabins that we got funding for, the money was used just for the materials. The National Guard brought in an engineer unit, and they spent their 2 weeks annual training at the camp building these cabins. They said it was one of the best two weeks of annual training they've ever had, because they probably got out and done some fishing too. But it's a great camp. I hope that people can get out there and see it. And it's definitely a very historic camp, and we're making modern additions to it. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Detmer. Any other questions from the committee? Well, to the testifiers, I want to thank you for coming in today. I appreciate it. And one comment, Representative Heinrich will like this, is, you know, we can always count on the Marines and organized labor to get things done. So anyway, any final comments, Representative Detmer?
No, it's just something that we got to take care of camps like this. I think the only camp like this in the state of Minnesota and in the country. We got to take care of it, make sure we keep working at it, expanding it, and making improvements for our younger veterans now that are utilizing it with their families. Thank you.
Representative Detmer, for the record, I referred it to the wrong place. It's going to Legacy. So Representative Detmer removes his motion that House File 3266 be referred to the Legacy Finance Division. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Just a little update for next week. Most of you saw in your email, our committee hearing will be starting at 4 o'clock after the training's done. We'll have a pretty full agenda of bills, so hopefully everybody can be prompt. And with that, meeting's adjourned.